only to have it overwhelmingly rejected. That's it for News Headlines. I'm Max Pringle.
I'm Parisa Neruzzi, and this is Taking Action on WPFW 89.3 FM. We come to you every Tuesday bringing information and inspiration that you need so that you can take action in our city to fight displacement, save our schools and communities, stand up for justice, build our power, and hold government officials accountable. Taking Action is produced by the grassroots organization Empower DC. We welcome your feedback and your show ideas. You can connect with Empower DC at empowerdc.org or 202-234-9119. I am happy to have guests on today who are leading efforts to build Black cooperatives. And this is as a means of building equity in Black communities while supporting workers and community needs. The Network for Developing Conscious Communities is launching its Co-opnomics Academy, offering a series of trainings here in DC and in Baltimore, launching very soon. And so we're happy to be joined on Taking Action today by the Executive Director of the Network for Developing Conscious Communities, Ron Hans, and his colleague, Makai Chapman. Thank you, Ron and Makai, for joining today.
Well, thank you, Parisa.
Yeah, thanks.
For having us.
Great to have you, and to talk about one of my favorite topics, cooperative economics, and opportunities to transform the way that we work together and operate our local economic systems for the betterment of the planet and the people. Before we get into all of the nitty gritty, I'd love for you each to just share a little bit more about yourself and your connection to the NDCC, I will say for short. Ron, you want to go ahead and start?
All right. Well, I'm Ron Hans. I'm Executive Director of the Network for Developing Conscious Communities. We're just celebrating our 11th year this month. And so we've been in the space of elevating the consciousness for Black-led community development organizations engaged in all aspects of community development, be it housing, be it employment, be it small business, be it arts, be it health. We work to aggregate those platforms for Black-led organizations.
Thanks, Ron.
Yeah, and I'd like to introduce Makai Chapman, who's a VISTA volunteer with us, who's been leading this work on developing the DC Black Co-opnomics Academy. So Makai, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I came on in December. Like Ron said, I'm just a VISTA volunteer.
That's an important role. I like that.
It's important to me.
Essentially a glorified intern, but I'm doing what I can. Just finished a bachelor's degree in journalism in Chico State back in California. Shout out to whoever knows what that is. Came back to DC, and after a horrifying month at Home Depot, I decided to branch my horizons and start doing what I actually liked to do. And volunteer and help who I can where I can. And so I ended up here.
Well, welcome, Makai. Ron, you know, you and I have known each other for a little while, but I actually have not had the opportunity to hear more of your backstory. And I know you're a leader in this community development movement locally, but I want to hear a little bit more about your origin story and how you even got involved in community development and cooperatives.
Oh, goodness. It goes back 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I cut my teeth working in affordable housing on a cooperative space. After graduate school in at Howard, I got a job with a nonprofit in the district called Muscles, Mission United to Support Community Life Endeavors. And so with Muscle, they were contracted with the city to do the training for those emerging organizations or emerging residents that were interested in forming cooperatives. And so I got a job with Muscle, and so that launched me into cooperative work. Needing to know that for over 25 years I've been familiar with housing cooperative, but I had no inkling, no understanding of what it meant to be in a worker or business environment working with cooperatives till about maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And so now I've combined my work with housing cooperatives with really the work of launching cooperatives in general.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And I wonder then, so you are a founder of the Network for Developing Conscious Communities, you yes. said about 11 years ago. So what led to you launching this organization?
Well, I had an epiphany moment. And sometimes we have those moments. And it came to me that after witnessing and experiencing community development, there was something missing, particularly in the Black community. There was dollars being invested in projects, but yet when you went back maybe 5 or 6 years later, you saw the same conditions. And so I, you know, sort of being the spiritual person I am, sort of looked at it from a spiritual perspective and said, what is it missing? What's missing in the growth and the development of these projects, these initiatives in the Black community? And it came upon me really that it was just a matter of consciousness, people's consciousness. And so I said, okay, then let me try to address that. And so I tried to address it through forming the Network for Developing Conscious Communities in terms of letting consciousness and spiritual principles guide our work. And so that brought me around full circle into the work, and to the work in a renewed way. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very unique about your organization that you have that grounding in consciousness, and as you've described it, even spirituality. And I mean, I think it is definitely appropriate because you can't do cooperative work without intentionality, right? And this is at its root, human beings cooperating, functioning together, which is probably the biggest challenge of cooperatives, I would you know, venture in my experience. But yeah, talk a little bit more about the Black co-op movement in particular, which is part of that, you know, the legacy that your work continues. I think the Black community does not get enough credit for its long-standing role in cooperative economics. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I have to give credit to Dr. Jessica Nebaugh for her book, Collective Carriage, in terms of re-inspiring a new consciousness around cooperatives. She did a really great job in the book of framing historically the work of Blacks in cooperative work. And so with that said, you know, I took some lead from her. And so I started to do some, incorporate some work around cooperatives in all the work that we did, either a session here or a session there or a symposium here. And then it came upon me that we got to grow the movement. And so about 4 years ago, I launched the National Conference on Black Cooperative Agenda. And it was not a launch of our idea, it was a relaunch of the Poor People's Development Foundation, which I'll talk about a little later. But they were the really ones that really, in the 60s, really inspired the growth of cooperatives again. And so with that said, I move to convene some folks to talk about what it does it mean to be in a movement of Black cooperatives. And so the movement has really grown over the last 3 or 4 years. And I've seen more people come into the movement now, more Black cooperatives being developed around food, around workers, around housing. And I'm seeing this more connectivity, as you mentioned, this collective connectivity around those who engaged in the work of elevating the movement around Black cooperatives. So I take no credit for the work. I'm just a contributor to the work.
You're part of, you're continuing on that legacy of folks like Ella Baker, who, you know, some folks don't know, was an early co-op organizer in New York City. And as you mentioned, Jessica Nemhard, who published her book, Collective Courage, and has worked locally as well with co-op. So mm-hmm. that's wonderful. And I don't want to take for granted that our listeners know what we're talking about when we say cooperative. So would you give us, you know, sort of a definition or a 101, what is a co-op and why co-ops?
Well, just simply put, a cooperative is a collectively owned business. Has to be more than one individual, at least two, that can form a co-op. So it's a collectively owned business. And it can be an idea that bursts cooperative out of anything could be a cooperative. Healthcare, arts, housing, small business, anything that you can think of can birth a co-op, and a co-op can evolve out of. And so so with that said, you know, I do want to just say also, I need to bring in this gentleman into the conversation, because he was very instrumental with getting Marion Barry to pass the first right of refusal law. And his name was Cornbread Givens. And Cornbread was committed to aggregating the work of cooperatives. And so with that said, him and Byron Ruskin and others formed the Poor People's Development Foundation, which was very instrumental in getting the first chartered national bank done through Congress, which is now National Cooperative Bank. But before it was called the National Consumer Cooperative Bank. So I want to just give onus to the work of Cornbread and Byron Ruskin and others in terms of formulating this work and bringing it back, you know, elevating it back up again.
That's wonderful. Can you give some examples of co-ops that you are familiar with in our region?
Oh, goodness. In our region, we have the cooperative that's working on purchasing, a purchasing cooperative. That's working on housing, because housing is a big ecosystem in the District of Columbia around cooperatives. Mm-hmm. So the Coalition for Nonprofit Housing Economic Development has done some research on looking at the work of housing cooperatives in the district. We have Boga Yoga, which is now a cooperative. So let's just name a few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you mentioned, there's all different, you know, types of businesses. And I think the listeners are familiar with food co-ops, where you can be a member or even some are worker owned, and housing co-ops. But any type of business, as you stated, could be functioning as a cooperatively owned cooperative. What are some of the key principles of cooperatives in terms of, you said there's more than one person. Is there anything else that is fundamental to having a co-op?
Well, you have to operate in a democratic way. Mm-hmm. Cooperatives, you know, empowered by the people that form them. So it's one person, one vote. And then there are, you know, some other principles that people operate on under, you know, the co-op to co-op principle number 7, that cooperatives support cooperatives. Cooperatives are also bring into the space collective work, continuity. Cooperatives also value and truly value the power of individuals in a collective way.
Thank you. And I want to start talking about this academy that you're launching. And I think you've done it before. I don't think it's the first time, but and I don't know if you want to bring Makai into this piece, but can you talk about the purpose and the vision behind the Co-opnomics? Am I saying it right? Co-opnomics Academy?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, let me bring Makai, because he's been working very diligently on recruiting, putting together the sessions. So Makai, won't you share your insight in terms of what you've been working on in terms of this Black Co-opnomics Academy that we're launching in DC?
Yeah. So like you said, Parisa, this is not the first time that the NDCC has put this together. I'm very fortunate that I'm working a lot with the bones of previous co-op academies in Baltimore. I believe this is the first one we're opening in DC. But a lot of my work has been to bring in speakers for each of the sessions, as well as trying desperately to market out to folks who want to try and start their own co-ops, but don't necessarily know how yet. We're currently setting up a shop in the Sankofa Video and Bookstore. And we're going to be setting up every evening next week, actually. Next week is our opening day. And hopefully we can get a bunch of people to show up and start learning with Ron Hans as our speaker. The big thing is the fact that we're bringing in local speakers. We're talking to people who are working within the DC area. We're talking to people in the DC area. We're not asking for folks to come out from Maryland, from Virginia, from even Southern or Northern Carolina. We're asking folks that are here already to try and build those local co-ops within the DC area. And that's one of the things that I've been focusing on really hard, is bringing in professionals and experts from DC to speak to people within DC. So that's not just the overarching, well, here's the ethereal bits and pieces of co-ops that you need. It's that these are the people you need to talk to. These are their emails. These are their phone numbers in case you need to talk to these folks about this thing. Bring in that personal experience to this area. Like, you don't necessarily want to work over on this street because there's some other stuff going on there. We want to work over here, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I would like to add to what Makai said, that our 12-week academy is a basic academy, just teaching people about cooperatives. Unfortunately, we don't have the resources to grow them into businesses, but we are soliciting, hopefully, grants to allow us to do that, so that we can take them from startup to expanding their cooperative idea and really helping them to grow the cooperative as a business. So that's what our ultimate goal is. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's more than just to teach people how co-ops work. It's to teach them so that they can start their own co-ops.
Yes.
I was going to ask you who should come. So it's not just for folks who are already part of a co-op, although they're welcome, right? It sounds like you're really looking for people who want to be cooperators. They want to help launch something, maybe transition something that they're part of into a cooperative model. It sounds like no previous experience required. It's really you're meeting people where they are and looking to go from there.
You just hit the head.
Okay, good.
That's what we're looking for. You know, people who are social entrepreneurs, people who who have an idea, may not know how to start it, and have people who have a relationship with someone else, and they're trying to figure out how to bond and how to grow their relationship. Yeah, so that's what we're looking at those people we're looking for. Those people we're looking for to help them to grow their idea around a cooperative. Maybe they have a business already that they've been stumbling by and maybe not being able to grow it. And maybe we can help them to crystallize their idea and bring it into full fruition around a cooperative model. Mm. Mm.
So you're meeting weekly, starting, is it next Wednesday, March 5th?
Yes.
Is that what it was? 6 to 8 p.m. at Sankofa Bookstore on Georgia Avenue. Mm-hmm. Share with us some of the topics that you'll be covering over these 12 weeks.
Oh, goodness. Well, we have five basic topics that we cover. Business plans, marketing, financial literacy, the co-op history. Mm-hmm. So those are the main ones that we cover. And then we incorporate some other discussions into the format around racial equity, around marketing to your community. We have a course around what it means to learn from other cooperators. So we have that session that we bring other cooperators into the space to share their experiences with the participants. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, just think about it. When you are in a cooperative and you might have had a relationship with someone, but there's nothing more trying than a business relationship with someone where you have to really rely on them to really hold up the end of the bargain in terms of a business venture. So while you may be a friend with someone, nothing beats the road in terms of just how you establish yourself as a business partner with someone. So we teach people that conflict resolution, because you're going to have, even though you're practicing co-op principles, there will be disagreements. And so how do we resolve those? So we have a course around conflict resolution in terms of how do you resolve the conflict and use it as a insightful way to grow as opposed to seeing it used in a negative way, try to use it in a positive way in terms of growth and stimulating ideas.
Makai, what are some of the topics that you want to just highlight for the listeners? Anything in particular?
Well, we have a gig, not this upcoming week, but the week after, with Truist Bank, talking about financial clarity for cooperatives. I think that's going to be really helpful. Again, it's that bringing in professionals within the field to our attendees. I'm looking forward to Gunnar Carlson. He's going to be coming out to us in April. He's going to be talking about member engagement strategies and building those connections with other cooperatives, like what Ron was saying. And the other one that I'm really excited for is funding futures and figuring out the strategies for how to finance these cooperatives. That's going to be pretty much our capstone in May. And that's with Taji Amani, again, another local business person. And these are all things that I don't know very much about outside of reading a couple of really helpful textbooks. And so learning from these folks in a more personal way is something I'm really excited for as somebody who's trying to put everything together.
Mm. And Ron, in your 30 plus years doing this work, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see facing co-ops and their sustainability?
Oh, goodness. Well, I have to first just talk about capacity. Because it's not a, particularly for Black cooperatives, white cooperatives get a different lift, unfortunately. But for Black cooperatives, it's really digging down and trying to grow in spite of limited resources. And so I like to see more resources being allocated to help folks grow their cooperative businesses. So some of the challenges are, capacity building, financing, because, in startups, you need someone to invest in you. And so without the investment of grant dollars or small micro loans, it's really difficult for Black cooperatives to get the leverage to grow their ideas. And then I think one of the challenges, again, I mentioned earlier, is about just being able to build out the relationships. Because again, you may have known someone as a friend, but you really don't know them as a business partner. And so that's a different kind of testimony that you bring into a relationship. And so those are some of the things I see, financing, capacity building, building the relationship among your cooperative team. And the fourth, probably ongoing training. And with that said, that, you can get to a certain point. People think they get to a certain point of knowing. No, in business, it's always growing, always evolving. And so you always have to put yourself at the plateau of being able to grow and learn. And so that's where I think that those are the four challenges I see around cooperatives today.
I know you're doing this work both in DC and in Baltimore. Have you noticed any distinctions between the co-op landscape in these two neighboring cities?
That's a really good question. In the District of Columbia, as opposed to Baltimore has a little more lift around cooperatives in the city. Not that historically DC has been well ahead of Baltimore in cooperative development. But I think what has happened is that the dynamics of working in a community has changed the dynamics in DC. I mean, you don't have a lot of grassroots organizations. Yours just happened to be one of two that's operating in the city. There's a time where we had over 25 community-based organizations doing development and doing cooperative housing. Well, that has diminished now. And so in Baltimore, it's growing. It's growing steadfast and ready, because you're getting more people engaged in the process. So I think that, historically, DC has history around cooperatives, but in recent years, I think that the challenges with the district has been the lack of community involvement, because the communities have changed. Mm-hmm. People have changed now. I mean, when I came into the district to work in the late 80s, it was a place where you needed to be. There was a need there, and there was people who recognized that need. Robert Moore and Madeline Perry and Butch Hopkins, and there were so many strong leaders. Well, we don't have those strong leaders now in the district as we once did. And so we're trying to infuse back into the district the thought of community participation, community involvement, and we're trying to do it through the cooperative model. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think the difference between Baltimore and DC are. Mm-hmm. Baltimore does have an organization over there that does provide funding. In DC, we don't have an organization that provides funding, even though Capital Impact Partners is a co-op lender and the Wakeheads is a co-op lender. They sort of look to the high end as opposed to to the grassroots movement that really need more support.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I imagine the cost of living in DC, the cost of rent and land and all of that has also had a big impact on the growth of co-ops here locally. I mean, you know, to acquire a property and turn it into a housing co-op now, of course, is hugely expensive and, you know, still possible, especially if it's prioritized through policy and funding. You know, still needs to be prioritized. Can you talk a little bit about the current political climate? And, you know, I don't know if there was any federal programs that were supporting co-ops, or, you know, or is there anything now that you fear could harm the growth of co-ops because of things happening on the federal level?
Oh, goodness. It's really disturbing. When I look out the window and see what's happening on a federal landscape, it's really disturbing. Because it's now have elevated the work of disfranchisement, the work of dismantling the work that has been done around racial equity, around DEI. And so I'm optimistic and still remain optimistic that we're gonna be able to fight back some of these policies that are coming from the administration. But it's gonna be a lot of work. And some of these things, who knows, we may not be able to get back in a healthy space once they dismantled and shelved out and put them on the side, we may not be able to get them back. So I think that it's important right now for us to organize, to mobilize ourselves, to stand up for what we know is right and righteous. I think that the work that I see right now in terms of USDA, their work in the rural communities are going to be affected, and so it's a lot to say where we're going to be at in years to come. I'm just hopeful that we'll be able to grow and maintain our whereabouts. But it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge.
Makai, feel free to jump in. I know you're newer to the field than Mr. Hands, who's been part of this for decades. So I don't want to, you know, put you on the spot. But feel free to jump in if there's things that you want to add to any of this. I wonder, for instance, as you've become more familiar with co-ops through your current role, Makai, are there certain aspects that, you know, you were surprised by or that, you know, particularly stood out to you as, you know, why don't more people know about this, or, you know, why haven't we done more of this?
I mean, the thing that stuck out to me most when I was first getting started and I'm reading all of these materials so I can be more helpful is, it's really hard to make money as a cooperative. Like, if what you want to do is make a large bank account for yourself, it is harder to do that with a cooperative. However, the contrast to that is what it does is it builds your community as a whole to be stronger. Like, yes, Bill down the street won't make as much money running a co-op. However, it won't be just Bill. It'll be Jeremy, it'll be Sarah, it'll be Mac. Everybody within that community will improve their quality of life, if only because it is one less thing they have to worry about, right?
Yeah, talk a little bit more, either of you, about how workers benefit from cooperatives versus a traditional corporate model.
Well, that's an easy take, because workers benefit because they are the ones that own the business. They're the ones that are there, just decision makers, as opposed to top-down decision making that comes from corporate capitalistic companies. You have bottom-up leadership in a co-op. So in a co-op, you can share insight and share a work. And that's the good thing about the co-op, is that you don't have to know everything, because you can share it among others and grow the model. So I think that, you know, with that said, it really opens the door for so many opportunities. Because again, you're not vested in knowing everything. You can have a role in the collective organization of a cooperative.
And in that regard, I'm sorry, Makai, go ahead.
To piggyback off of that, the other big thing, the major benefit, one of the major benefits for workers is the fact that the power is with them. It is not your boss from on high telling you to do X, Y, and Z or else.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It is we as a team say we should do Y instead. And then everybody has a chance to vote on it. Are we changing our price model? Are we changing our rules and regulations within the company? And everybody gets a vote. It's not hanging out by the water cooler and bemoaning the newest regulations. It's that, okay, we as a collective are talking about what we need to change and what we can do to improve what we're doing.
And you mentioned, you know, the financial aspect of it, that this is not maybe the path to getting the wealthiest, the fastest, but it does have another type of economic stability. I wonder, Ron, if you could speak to that wealth creation, you know, equity element, because you emphasize that a lot in your material. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So speak to that a little bit more.
Well, it's about wealth building and wealth sharing. Mm-hmm. It's about building the wealth collectively and sharing in the wealth collectively. And so everybody gets the chance to partake in the wealth of the organization. Mm-hmm. And which is different than the capitalist model, because the capitalist model, the top heavy are usually the benefactors of the proceeds, and then they doodle out the wages to the workers. Well, this model here is the workers are the owners. And they get an opportunity to decide how much of the proceeds they want to share with each other, which is different than their capitalistic model. They get to share, they get the opportunity to decide. Maybe during a bad year, they can take a cut in wages to get through the tough times. And matter of fact, The data shows that during the pandemic, cooperatives did much better than capitalistic businesses.
Wow.
Because the fact that of agreement that people had among themselves to work together. And so they shared in the fact that they took lesser wages to see the growth of the company go, as opposed to capitalistic companies that laid off people.
Right.
Yeah, they laid off and cut back on salaries and cut back on the number of employees.
Mm-hmm.
So cooperatives do have a profound impact on individual wealth building and wealth sharing.
You spoke a little bit about capacity as well, that building capacity is such a critical element here. And you talked about how DC once had a more robust community development landscape with more community development organizations and community organizations. What would you say is the state of the capacity for the community development movement here in DC now? Because, you know, I worry about that. I feel like we have you know, groups that are not actually doing community development, but they call it community development. So the community is actually not involved usually, and not certainly not the decision makers. But are there resources that you would say are, you know, really vital to cooperatives and community development here in DC, or what's the state of our field here?
Well, let me just say this here. Policy is driven by the policymakers. And if the policymakers aren't aligned with a policy of equity, a policy of wealth building, wealth sharing, then it makes it very difficult for organizations, any organization, to adhere to that, which is inconsistent with the goal of creating wealth. And I think in DC, you know, unfortunately, our mayor hasn't really stepped up to the plate. Yeah, I think just to be honest, our city council has not stepped up to the plate, and recognized that there are people in the city who could use more lift than they're getting. And so, am I optimistic? I don't know. I don't know how optimistic I can be, because the proof is in the pudding, and the proof says right now that it's the rich or the benefactors that can get things done are the ones that are benefiting from city resources. They're the ones who can arguably and orchestrate the channeling of resources to them and their organizations. Yeah. But the grassroots folks who are on limited incomes, limited circumstances, their voice is not being heard. But it's going to take, you know, some changing of the guard for that to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you that we don't have leadership at the top who is embracing, championing community development, cooperatives, anything that is a, you know, non-anti-capitalist strategy in terms of, you know, building capacity and ownership, community control. And it is very difficult because, you know, for instance, to even get there could be cooperative elements to city projects that they're doing, but there has not been the willingness. And like you alluded to, the city is more likely to heavily subsidize a large for-profit entity that's probably white-led, that's probably not even from DC, it's probably coming from Boston or somewhere else, than to invest in our own homegrown grassroots, you know, more modest community development opportunities.
Yeah, well, you can look around and see all the development that the city has invested in, and none of it has benefited low to moderate income individuals.
Yeah,
none of it. I mean, the transition of the Walter Reed site.
Yeah.
I mean, goodness. I mean, that was public land that could have been used to orchestrate more cooperative businesses, give more a leniency to startups, because the city had a hand in the control of the land, but they've opted to look the other way and do what is really unconsciously about building profit.
Yeah, and you know, it's a backwards economic thinking too, because the city keeps emphasizing the need to bring in higher wealth people to boost the tax base, but we don't do the things to increase our own, lift up our own residents and build the tax base that way. And
yeah.
So we have the same poverty rate that we've had for decades. I think all of this, you know, gentrification, all this redevelopment, the poverty rate has not lessened. So it shows that, you know, it's not a strategy that works at the base, you know, at the grassroots to uplift people. You mentioned the National Co-op Bank, and so I wanted to just mention that they also have a Co-op Hall of Fame. That's fun. It's a fun thing to go online and look and see who they've inducted into the Co-op Hall of Fame. And I have to shout out Linda Leakes, who is the co-founder of Empower DC and an organizer who helped to establish, we think, about 16 housing cooperatives here in DC. She was inducted into the Co-op Hall of Fame in 2023. So, you know, there is some work being done, of course, to continue to uplift co-ops, but it's not at the level that it should be. I had heard, Ron, about an initiative, and I haven't heard an update recently, where WASIF, what is that, Washington Area, is a Community Investment Fund, is that what it stands for?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They had announced a program to support legacy businesses where the owner is retiring, to transition into a worker co-op model. And I thought that was really smart to say, okay, folks who've been in business, you know, 30, 40 years, they don't have an heir who's taking it over. They could become, they could help, you know, leverage that into a worker owned co-op. And I haven't heard how that's been going, if it's been effective or not. Have you heard anything?
Well, they've disbanded it.
Okay. So
yeah. So now Rockdale Capital has taken ownership of that particular initiative.
Okay.
John Holslaw III is the president and CEO of Rockdale Capital, but they've now taken over that whole effort that brings
that project.
That brings ownership around worker owned businesses. Excuse me, businesses that could be transitioned to worker owned businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we can work with Rochdale to boost that effort and see if we can get some more DC businesses into the pipeline for that one. Before we run out of time, I want to go back again to the Co-opnomics Academy. Again, this is for DC, it's a free, am I correct? It's a free,
that's right. Free.
12-week academy where every Wednesday you're meeting in person at Sankofa. 6 to 8 p.m. So it's after work. You can join. What else should people know? I'm sure you have a registration process, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Go ahead, Makai. Can't you give them the information?
Yeah. So when somebody new comes up to one of our sessions, I'm going to have them fill out a quick little questionnaire about where they're at financially, like what's their family like, just so that we have some background information for our purposes. As well as to build a essentially an attendance list, for lack of a better word, so that we know who's been to all of our sessions, and so we know everybody's name, right? We also are going to ask for people to give us a bio of themselves. This is not like us trying to rip information out of anything. This is again just us trying to get to know our attendees better. We're building relationships, right? We're trying to build co-ops. We're trying to make something here. And so just everybody showing up, hang out in a corner and then leaving without talking to anybody doesn't actually help us. We want people to talk to each other. We want people to know each other, and we want to be able to facilitate that easier so that people have things that they know about each other. That kind of thing. There's not an interview process, it's just a registration. I've been hounding some of my people who have already signed up for some of this information, and they've been about 50-50.
Mm-hmm. So do people need to register in advance, or it's okay for them to show up next Wednesday and then just sign in basically and join?
We really wanted people to sign up early, but as time has got, as we have gotten closer and closer, me and Ron have talked about it, and it's inevitable that we're going to have a bunch of folks that show up that haven't signed up.
And that's okay. You're going to allow that. You're going to allow it. Yeah. Okay.
We're not going to turn anybody away.
That's good. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah. I do want to give the website where they can go and register in advance. And again, Makai talked about the bios. The bios really to share the bios with the members of the co-op, because I want people to cross-fertilize themselves in knowledge and share their experiences. So the website is www.ndccnetwork.org. You can go to that website and go to Co-op Economics Academy and complete the registration form for the Spring DC Academy.
And you have a concurrent workshop series in Baltimore, is that correct?
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you want to speak to that just a little bit? So is it the same topics?
Well, same format. And the website is the same, except in you will go, instead of clicking on DC Co-op Academy, you click on the Baltimore Co-op Academy and fill out that application for Baltimore.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. All right. Well, I want to again just urge the listeners, you know, if you're curious to learn more about cooperatives, if you're part of something that could get some a boost from learning from others, from meeting Ron and his colleagues and hopefully getting their support, please come check out the Co-opnomics Academy. It's not something that we have all the time, right? It's a great opportunity to go and again, once a week at Sankofa, 6 to 8 p.m., learn a multitude of topics from building, preserving the heritage and future of Black-owned cooperatives, financial related topics, marketing, legal structures, sustainability. So many critical elements of cooperative development. And Ron, who should come? So one final pitch for who should come to this event.
Anyone who's interested in learning about cooperatives should register and come to this session. Before I do leave, I do just want to take my hat off to you, Marissa, for the work that you do.
Thank you.
And elevating dialogue around community development. And so, you do great work.
Thanks, Ron. I remember fondly coming to one of your sessions in Baltimore several years back. I don't know if we're even a decade ago. I don't know. Time has been flying. but I'm glad to see, you know, your continued work. And, I wonder what's next after Co-opnomics. Is there anything on the horizon for you?
Well, we will. We're planning a national conference on Black cooperative agenda. We're nice. Looking at hosting it in Atlanta this year. Last year we're in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the previous year we're in Las Vegas, and the previous year we're in Baltimore. So this is our fourth year.
Wonderful.
And we're looking at going in the South and elevating the work of Black cooperatives in southern states of Georgia.
That's great work that you're doing. I, again, encourage everybody to go to your website, ndccnetwork.org. Again, that's Network for Developing Conscious Communities, ndccnetwork.org. Sign up for the Co-opnomics Academy or just get, you know, more information about Ron and his work and get plugged in for future opportunities. You guys are welcome back on Taking Action anytime. So.
Well, thank you.
Plug us in. Let us know when you want to come back. And I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. I want to thank you for your support during the pledge drive the last couple of weeks. Stay tuned for another great program, Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. But first, we're going to hear the news. We'll be right back.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. 21 federal technology staffers resigned today in what is being seen as a mass protest resignation against the efforts of the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. The staffers served as engineers, designers, data scientists, and project managers for the U.S. Digital Service, or USDS, which is the agency that became DOGE. Their resignation letter states in part, and I quote, "We will not use our skills as technologists to compromise core government systems, jeopardize Americans' sensitive data, or dismantle critical public services." And they added, quote, "We will not lend our expertise to carry out or legitimize DOGE's actions," end quote. Their resignation comes after the Monday midnight deadline that Elon Musk gave federal workers to respond to his email explaining their work accomplishments, saying that failure to do so would be viewed as a resignation. As of last night, a new email was generated indicating that federal employees may be given another chance to respond to the initial email and warned that they could still be fired if they did not do so the second time around. Over the past few months, it's been common to hear about people coming down with the flu. Up to 910,000 hospitalizations are estimated to have been caused by the flu since October 2024. Data suggests that the huge wave of illness this past fall and winter climbed to the worst rates recorded from hospitals and doctors' offices since the 2009 swine flu pandemic. Currently, as much of the country is finally seeing a slowdown in flu activity, the CDC gave an indication into why there was such a high number of infections. This season's flu vaccine may not have been strong enough to combat a popular strain of the flu that circulated the country, known as H3N2. Dr. John LaPook, a board-certified physician in internal medicine, acknowledged that this has, quote, been a bad year, no doubt about it. Soul music has taken a hard hit over the last several days with the deaths of Jerry Butler, Gwen McCrae, and Roberta Flack. Yet another legend passed away this week. Chris Jasper, a later member of the Isley Brothers and original member of Isley Jasper Isley. He was 73 years old and had been diagnosed with cancer less than 2 months ago. Chris Jasper, a classically trained musician, performed in a jazz trio with his younger brothers-in-law, Ernie and Marvin Isley, before the three of them joined the eldest Isleys, Ron, Rudolph, and O'Kelly, in 1973, performing as a six-man band until 1983 on 12 albums. During that time, Chris Jasper contributed vocals and or instrumentation to hits like Summer Breeze, For the Love of You, and Voyage to Atlantis. Jasper, Ernie, and Marvin later formed the band Isley Jasper Isley, having their biggest hit with Caravan of Love in 1985, on which Jasper sang lead vocals. In 1992, Jasper was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of the Isley Brothers. Chris Jasper is survived by his wife of 42 years, Margie, and their three sons. To the D.C. area, due to the uncertainty surrounding jobs in the federal government, the D.C. Department of Employment Services has launched a website to help workers navigate the UCFE program, UCFE standing for Unemployment Compensation for Federal Employees. As the name suggests, the UCFE program provides unemployment compensation for former federal employees who lost their employment through no fault of their own. The website also offers career opportunities through its American Job Centers. For more information and details on who qualifies, visit does.dc.gov. Again, that's does.dc.gov. In today's weather, it's currently about 61 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe, and thank you for listening.